Night gathers, and now our podcast begins. It shall not end until we're done talking. We are
the princes that were promised.
And hello. Welcome. Hello, hello. Welcome, everybody, to the princes that were promised. The wardens of Long Island. The watchers on the couch. And we're focusing on the characters of season four. Instead of going through each member of the largest cast in television with a fine-tooth comb, we're going to follow a formula that has been working for us, at least to this point. And I'm not too sure how well it's going to work for us going forward, because the story changes, which we talked about in our episode that covered the narrative of season four. We talked about how the playing field changed. Westeros got turned on its head, in a sense. But of all the characters, we're going to pick out one character that best represents the status quo of Westeros, the Seven Kingdoms. We're going to pick out one character that best represents a protagonist, a character that is fighting to protect the status quo or make the status quo better. We're going to pick out an antagonist, a character that is fighting against the status quo or trying to change the status quo for a worse. A character that represents chaotic good, off doing their own thing, but most of the things they do are for the betterment of the realm. Chaotic evil, who's just the opposite, doing their own thing. Somehow, what they do makes the realm a worse place, or, more importantly, makes the status quo of Westeros, it affects it negatively. And then we have our existential threat and our realistic threat. The status quo recognizes, knows is a threat, not an immediate threat, but an oncoming threat. 2, 4, 6, that's 7 different characters. Now let's start at the top. John, which character from season 4 do you feel best represents the status quo of the realm, of Westeros?
I still think it's House Lannister.
Okay.
I still think it's like Tywin and Cersei being one new combination, but it's still House Lannister.
I agree with you to a certain degree, but the way I set mine up, I'm just going to go with Tywin. I would agree with you otherwise, but the reason I did it this way is because Joffrey is taken out of the picture, and Cersei, she didn't have control over Joffrey, but Joffrey thought more along her lines. Mm-hmm. Don't trust anybody. Everybody's an enemy. We don't need anybody's help. You got to take advantage of power, rule through fear. Tywin's not like that. And as soon as Joffrey was dead, Tywin didn't seem like he was all that sad that Joffrey was dead. He immediately got his hooks in Tommen so that Tommen wouldn't turn into another Joffrey. He clearly has a idealistic difference with his daughter as to how to rule. So yeah, Cersei tries to be like Tywin, but she doesn't understand. She doesn't get it the way that Tywin gets it. Tywin has been ruling the realm successfully for years and years, and now in season 4, with Robb Stark out of the way, he's just focusing on the political side of it and making sure that he gets Westeros in order, which is what he's doing for the season. So for status quo, I do agree with you that it's House Lannister, but I think it's just Tywin.
I get it. I just, because my not status quo, I have another house.
Okay, that's cool.
So I thought there was a comparison between.
Listen, man, the rules are, there are no rules. It's just to inspire discussion. So you're going to jump to protagonists next. So the way I define it, you can define it however you want, but the way I define it is the character that is in conflict and the conflict revolves around keeping the status quo as is or making it better for the status quo. Fighting for the status quo, basically. I'd pick Tyrion. So that's why I didn't want to go with old House Lannister for status quo, because I was kind of splitting up House Lannister. I went with Tyrion because of all of Tywin's kids, I think Tyrion understands him the best. And even though Tywin doesn't respect Tyrion, and maybe Tyrion doesn't respect Tywin, which he clearly doesn't when they last see each other, they both have the same goal for Westeros, which is an end to this war, the betterment of House Lannister, a secure throne for Joffrey or Tommen. I think Tyrion, based even on decisions he made 2 seasons ago, I think he fights for that most
there is a little bit of self-preservation in Tyrion's mm-hmm. motivations this season. But of all the characters, I can't think of one that is more interested in the same thing that Tywin, who represents the status quo, was interested in. That being said, you can go in a different direction.
Well, I see. When I hear potential, you always bring it back to status quo, and I don't think that way.
No doubt.
When I hear Britannia, I just think who the Britannia of this story was, of this season was. And I just feel like Tyrion, as much as he wants for House Lannister and the same thing Tywin is, he's...
His role was somewhat reduced in season 4.
Right, and he's kind of like not against Tywin, he's always fine with Tywin.
Yeah.
So my protagonist, and the reason why I put my protagonist, I think it's starting up already in this season already, Tannis is Jon Snow. They're giving him the reins of the law of the story.
All right.
And it goes hand in hand who my antagonist is.
Fair enough, man. I'm into it. I can see it going that way. So that's the thing with like season 1, this was easy. Season 2 was even kind of easy, but then...
The last season, I was kind of tough. Really,
too many storylines going on, you know? So that's why I'm trying to think of it in terms of the status quo character. But you can go in this, you can definitely go in this direction, without a doubt. So you continue. Who's your antagonist then? If your protagonist is Jon Snow.
Ramsay Snow.
I didn't think they include him.
They're already showing like...
They're headed for a... headed for a confrontation.
And he's so messed up.
That's actually a pretty interesting thing. Especially, and we can look at it now, season 4. Maybe we should have when we did the narratives, but how each of their stories mirror each other, so to speak. They're both bastards. They're both put in positions of leadership. They're both good warriors. I mean, it kind of ends there, the similarities, but they both kind of rise.
Well,
to the ranks,
John's more of a warrior, where Ramsay's more cunning and strategist.
Yeah. My antagonist, I put Cersei. That goes back to my
Tyrion being the antagonist.
Well, also, season 4 being about the self-destruction of House Lannister, that being the main storyline. If you believe that, you may not think that. So there it is. Chaotic good, I really could not decide.
I wrote this down, I was hell bent. There's a great answer, but. I'm starting to think on it again. I'm not really...
What would you put?
Aubrey Martell, but I'm starting to think... Oh. This...
It's not a bad one.
But what kind of good does he really do? He really doesn't do any...
That's the thing.
...good. Like, anything he does really...
Yeah.
When I first wrote it down, I'm like, it's Aubrey Martell. But now I'm starting to think, he doesn't do anything any good really for House Martell. Right, he doesn't
even do anything good for Tyrion.
Doesn't do anything right. Doesn't do anything good for the realm.
No.
There's really, you know...
There's more chaos to it, actually.
Yeah.
If anything, I think you can make a better case that he's chaotic.
He's chaotic bad.
Yeah.
But that goes... I have a good one for chaotic bad, so I can't put him chaotic bad.
Yeah.
So I'm going to wipe him off for chaotic good. And I got to think now.
At first, I was thinking Arya. But Arya doesn't really do anything for the realm. She's starting to develop this revenge thing. Mm-hmm. And if the status quo is Tyrion Lannister, then she's definitely not chaotic good. So then I was thinking Bran, because he's off traveling on his own. Nobody knows he's alive. And the whole reason for his journey is for the good of the realm, for the good of all people. And then my other thought was Brienne of Tarth.
I was thinking Brienne a little bit, and now Taylor is the only character I can... This one's really tough.
I'm going to go with Brienne, because nothing's planned, nothing's strategized, everything that happens to her... And she is out there for the good of the Starks. And the Lannisters need the Stark girls. She's doing it for Jaime.
Yeah, I guess.
House Lannister.
If I had to put anything down, I'm starting to think it too now for some reason.
I think you changed my mind with Chaotic Evil, though. I think I'm going to go with Oberyn. I was going to go with Littlefinger. But
me too. I have Littlefinger as my chaotic bad.
I'm going to go with Oberyn. I'm going to go with Oberyn. Because Littlefinger, well, you could easily make a case with Littlefinger. You definitely could. Chaos is a ladder. But I feel like... You can actually make a case for Arya as chaotic evil, too. But the thing with Littlefinger, he counts on chaos, but that's just it. He counts on chaos. Like he's got a plan. He's got a scheme that he's following. I don't know how chaotic it is. But same thing with Oberyn. He came down with a purpose. It seems like he can't control his emotions, as you said. Like, he had the mountain beat, but he needed that revenge. He needed it, and it cost him his life. I'm going to go with Oberyn. I think I'm going to go with Oberyn. Because Arya, I can't call her chaotic evil. I can't do it. You're gonna go with Littlefinger?
I think I'm stuck on the tower with Littlefinger.
Yeah, alright. Fair enough. I mean, I could go either way, dude. I think Littlefinger's a good choice also. You put Jon Snow as a protagonist, so, well, let's go to Threat, which had been Daenerys, but I'm gonna name it Stannis. this season. Because Stannis was defeated on the Blackwater. Mm-hmm. But Tywin never counted him out. And he's still around, building strength. And Tywin knows that. So he's got his eye on him. He's gonna toss the job off to the Boltons, but he does have his eye on Stannis, so he's a very real threat. And I'm gonna keep my existential threat as Jon, because he's still a threat that nobody knows about that will completely shake up the status quo. You say that about Daenerys, but they know about Daenerys. Being that Daenerys decided to rule Meereen for a while makes her less of a threat than Stannis.
We don't do that status quo. Did I just put that in for no reason?
I think you just put that in for some reason.
All right, I guess we're not doing that. If there was a not status quo,
well, so like
we House Tyrell, because now Tyrell's getting.
Yeah, right. I would pick House Tyrell. Right. Okay. Almost like an alternate status quo, mm-hmm. like prepackaged. Yeah, that's a good one. I think this is the last time that Jon Snow, for me, is going to be used as an existential threat, though, because he is, like we said, this is his breakout season, and he's got more important things to do. Who'd you put? You put Jon Snow as your protagonist, which is cool. So who'd you put as your existential threat?
I didn't put him in because I thought we did six was not status quo.
Oh, alright.
So I didn't put one in for that.
That's fair enough. This is a tough one. It's something that it made a lot of sense when we did season one. It fit season two, season three, not so much. You can put characters there and make them work, but there's no right or wrong answer. So let's talk for a minute then about the new characters of season four.
Wow. Orbin Martell, obviously. Yeah. And Illyria Sand.
Illyria, who's still around.
Locke was there, never mind.
Locke was in season three.
Yeah, Locke was season three. Carl Tanner.
Well, two episodes, but Styr.
Yeah.
The Magna of Fen.
Ollie.
Mace, we're introduced to Mace Tyrell this season. He wasn't in last season. He wasn't in season three.
Yeah, Mace Tyrell. His daughter Zoe Lorak.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think of anyone else in Danny's camp.
You can't really count new,
I was gonna say new Dario. new when we think of Rube Dario.
Yeah.
I think that's it. I can't think of anyone else. Too. I'm sure I'm gonna forget someone. They're like, oh, look, that guy.
Qyburn was season three.
New Tommen.
New and improved Tommen. Definitely a better Tommen. First Tommen was like dumb. He's just a kid, but like.
The new Tommen is going out the new Marcella in real life.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Was there anyone else?
I think that's it, man.
Was Royce from the Vale? Was he?
It's just the one scene, though. You know. And he's only in like one other scene. Then going forward, all right. So I mean, obviously, Oberyn Martell was the most popular new character. But Illyria Sand is still with us, going into season seven. And that's about it. She's the only one living. All these other guys are dead.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I don't think. I don't think she's a wasteful character also. There's no end game for her.
No.
There's no end game. I can't see her having any importance in the show. I'm surprised she's even in, she's lasted this long, in all honesty.
Well, it's just to add some credit to Daenerys coming over. Like she already has her houses.
I can't imagine if she fits the seventh season eight, I'd be really shocked. I can't imagine her.
Yeah. I don't like that actress too much. She's in a lot of British shows that I watch.
Yeah, she's right. It's like Natalie Portman prequels. Yeah. She doesn't fit.
No, she doesn't.
Like fantasy role. Right. She seems like she's probably too.
Not even thespian. Like she's just like too. She belongs like on a crime drama or something like that.
Right, out
of the fantasy epic. And Carl Tanner, that actor that played Carl Tanner, Bern Gorman, I like him a lot. He was also on Torchwood. He's a good actor. The character of Styr, I didn't really like.
Nice.
You know, I mean, just the bad guy. How about Tormund? Did we start to like Tormund this season?
Well, at the end, that last episode, he started like...
Yeah.
He started saying to John, like, did you love her?
Right, he had some...
She loved you.
He had some mutual respect for John.
Right.
Towards the end, him and John had mutual respect for each other, and that's how you made. That's one of my favorite parts about season six. John Snow's little circle with him and Davos and Tormund, and I love that. I think Tormund's like...
And Santatelli has to kick in, like, oh, that's your advisor now, all of a sudden. Like, who's your advisor? Littlefinger. Yeah. Like, this is your advisor. You're listening to a guy.
It's my advisor wants me to win. Your advisor just
wants
to use you.
Yeah. Your advisor goes to kill your freaking father.
Who, by the way, is not my father, so. Fuck you. Who gives you the best performance in season four?
Best performance? Wow.
Let's do the actor and the actress, because I think I gotta go Lena Headey for actress, and it's too easy for her. Who's the guy that plays Oberyn Martell? What's his name?
I'm just going to say him. Bob. Pascal.
Pablo, right? Pablo Pascal?
Yeah.
Pablo Pascal.
Who, again, I will say this again, is Lena Headey's baby father.
Really?
Yes. Baby daddy. Bam.
You sure about that?
Fairly positive.
I'm kidding.
They were quite chummy on the set, you know what I mean? Take one, where are they? Get her out of the camper.
They're in Littlefinger's brothel again. They got the door locked.
I'm wrong, and all of a sudden I get sued by Lena Headey. Yeah, so if we turn around, Lena Headey, they're all going to come down.
Carrie Fisher Estate.
Brian Billings. What was the episode? What was the episode we were talking about when we were laughing about? Oh, God.
Was it recent or?
Yeah, it was the last couple of episodes, and we're like, oh, yeah. He's kind of like Kathy Tari, he's heavy breathing or something. I'm like, you're going to hell. We're making a pun of this guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What was that? It was, oh, God, what was it?
It was one of the TV episodes, right?
I think so, yeah. I don't know now. I forgot.
We said he's half retarded, but. I like remember, but like I don't.
I can't remember what we're talking about. Yeah. It's going to piss me off now. I'm going to go home and try to watch episode it was.
Was it one of the Game of Thrones actors? Maybe?
I don't know. Whatever the case may be. We're like laughing.
We're bad, dude. We're bad. Sometimes. With certain people, you know? Carrie Fisher, for the most part, deserves it.
It wasn't me. It wasn't me, folks. It wasn't me. I'm going to say they're killing me right now.
An army of Carrie Fisher's lawyers. Did you get a Carrie Fisher? Have you seen her daughter?
No.
Oh, you never saw her daughter?
No.
I feel like if they did like a legacy stand-up one-off episode, yeah, I feel like she could play. I feel like she could play Leia. I think so.
Looks like her.
Yeah, I think so. She was in one of those images that got released for episode 8.
Really?
Yeah. She's a it's just like a cameo she has in both movies, but Carrie Fisher daughter. What the frick is her name? Billy Lord. Yeah, Billy Lord. Yeah, I mean, maybe not. Nah, maybe not. I was just saying, she was done up in like Star Wars, like a Star Wars outfit, Star Wars makeup, and I was like, yeah, she maybe passes young Carrie Fisher.
Oh my god, she's just a freaking kook.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, what a freaking nut job. Yeah. You just look at her, she's just freaking nuts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not the daughter, Carrie Fisher, by the way. No, I mean,
like, thank God for the daughter that they're both out of the picture. She would have been a kook too.
Yeah, I don't know. She,
yeah, a little too, a little too thin, a little too like.
Yeah, too like, really, yeah.
Straight, like, yeah.
Oh my god, it's. Yeah. With that. like,
Kylo, get mommy a cigarette, Kylo.
When I walk out tonight to my car, I'll have like big check all my stuff.
John Canteen, you get served. See you in court for making fun of Carrie Fisher.
Lightsaber bats.
Yeah. Oh. There he is, get him! Carrie Fisher rules.
Oh, God.
So what did you think of Charles Dance's portrayal of Tywin Lannister? Did you think it was lacking in any area? Do you think he captured what the character is all about?
I thought he captured it pretty well. Yeah, I don't think there was anything.
I used to think the first two seasons, I thought maybe he didn't. The intimidation that Tywin has when he speaks with somebody. But that kind of changed when they had that Joffrey scene in the throne room. And Joffrey wanted to know what was going on with Daenerys. And he's like, walking up the stairs.
Like, he kind of like.
He developed in the role. It's like when you watch the Star Wars prequels, right? And everything you see on the screen is like eye candy. And it looks amazing. I mean, I haven't watched them in a couple of years. So I don't know how dated they are now. But when they came out. And then you come home and you watch the original trilogy. And those look great too. But they're dated. You know they're dated. It's like, all right, well, that's supposed to be in the future of this. But it's like technology's not as good. And the world's not as big. I get that feeling with Game of Thrones, like things that should have been bigger are not big enough until now. A good example is at the end of season 6 when Daenerys is, her ships are sailing. A fuck ton of ships in the water. You don't see anything that hints that there's even that many people to man those ships.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like the grand scale of things.
There's just two people manning the ships.
Right. Well, yeah, right? There's just one guy taking a nap and the other guy, you know, trying to sail the thing and they switch up. But I feel like that was part of the struggle for me with season 1, 2, and 3 also was not so much the budget they were given, but what they were able to do with that budget. And I think with season 4, the scope, the world building for the Game of Thrones show, it got better because the scope, what they were able to do with that money, how big they were able to make Westeros look, how big they were able to make the streets of King's Landing, it got a lot better. It went up a notch. And really, I think that may be the most important thing about season four. As far as characters, just the change in focus, Jon Snow, Cersei, you know, no more Tywin. And with Tywin gone, really, that's the end of the old guard. I mean, you still have Stannis, but...
Way one more cities and kitties.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Stannis, that's it for the old guard then, is Stannis. You know, the guys that fought or were a big part
Robert's of Robert's Rebellion. But the only one really around that had a big part in it would still be Jaime.
Yeah. With Tywin's death, Jaime is kind of an elder statesman of Westeros who's seen a lot of war. And I think his character adjusts as such. But besides the characters, just the set pieces, the design, the scope of the world, it changes a lot between season three and season four. When you think about the Red Wedding, when you picture it, it's this big hall. But then you look at it on television and it's kind of a small set. It feels kind of cramped. And I don't know what it was between season three and season four where they were able to get that feel to their sets. But we talked about the Purple Wedding and you didn't like that it was outside. I think that was a specific choice to be outside for that very reason, because this is the royal wedding of two most powerful houses in Westeros. So it had to feel like epically big. They couldn't get that in one of their sets. So I think that'd be why they would have done it outside. Mm-hmm. Because if you think about it, to shoot that big of a scene outside and chance like rain and you lose all that money, that's not ideal. It's not an ideal filming situation. But just to get that scope, to get that feel, to get the set to match the story that they're telling, they're able to do that a lot better season four. And it gets better with each season now. Season three was when the show became an event, right? Like a weekly thing that everybody was watching.
I'm looking up right now that Lena Headey thing just because now it's bothering me.
What, her kid?
Yeah. It's bothering me.
Yeah, I don't know, bro. I never heard that before. Lena Headey just owns the role of Cersei in season four. Like, she just gets better and better every season and reveals new things about the character each season. It's like really amazing that she hasn't won an Emmy yet. It's amazing that the only person that has won an Emmy has been Dinklage. No, season one. Are you right?
Maybe I'm wrong. This could be dangerous.
It's not him?
I don't know.
You don't want the estate of Pablo Pascal after you for paternal accusations.
The Game of Thrones star gave birth to her second child, a girl, in July 2015, and it remains unclear who the father is. Some fans have assumed that the dad is Lena's ex-husband, Peter, whatever, though the duo divorced in 2015.
Wait, she doesn't know who the father is?
No.
Wow.
Her co-star Pedro Pascal was also rumored to be the father.
Oh, not Pablo Pascal, Pedro Pascal. Pablo. All right, let me get this straight. Lena Headey doesn't know who her child's parent, who her child's father is.
I guess not. I mean, I don't know. She
sleeps around, huh?
Oh, she's not job, I think.
That's awesome.
I'm going out there right now. Yeah. I'm getting killed. That's gonna be Lena. Yeah. That's gonna be a story for you. That's gonna be Lena Headey.
Lena Headey herself. I heard what you said, John. You know, it's funny. The things I'd seen Lena Headey in before Game of Thrones, I never really liked it too much.
Game of Thrones news. Lena Headey reveals dad a second baby. No secret remains.
Who's the dad? She can keep us in suspense.
I'm happy to confirm that I'm having my second child this summer. The actress decided to reveal her pregnancy in the hope of regaining some privacy, which she felt was lost after some photographs kept on prying on her. Headey is an actor support woman's right. However, there were speculations that her co-star Pedro Pascal, 39, is her new love, and a report from Mail Online, the two were spotted going out early during Headey's pregnancy, which spurs the issue that the two are an item. Although they were freely seen together, the pair never admitted any budding romance, and there was no indication that Pascal is indeed the father. Pascal played the character of Orin Martell, but nothing. The father of Headey's second child will remain a secret until the new mom confirms it. This is back in 2015. I don't know. I think it's Peter Pascal.
Yeah, the way you tell
about it, it's like, you know.
Context clues.
Yeah, Peter, I mean, this is kind of like,
congratulations to them. I mean, he wouldn't, like, that goes back to the Ned thing we were talking about a few episodes ago. Would he be dating her if she was pregnant with some other dude? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not my kid. I'm not, like, going through a pregnancy with you. You know?
Right, yeah. I mean, the story, like, you know, if you, like, you know, marry her and then all of a sudden, like, oh, yeah, by the way.
Oh, now that you said I do. I'm pregnant. It's not yours. It's like, what the fuck? Like, could you tell me this like a little bit earlier? Like, yeah. Anyway, so on that note, we'll be back at you guys next week with season 5 coverage. Thanks for sticking with us. Please leave a review for us on iTunes.
on Stitcher, on Google Play. Tell your friends about us, and that's about it. Badge.